From Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Support for today's broadcast comes from the Yoga Institute of Champaign-Urbana, offering beginner-level instruction in Iyengar Yoga with special classes for men, women, teens, seniors, healthy heart, plus size, knees, low back, neck, and shoulders. New classes start the first week of February. Information at 344-YOGA or on the web at yoga-cu.com.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Kimberly Cronick for Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in. Our guest today is Byron Katie. Byron Katie is a businesswoman, author, and self-help facilitator. She's written two books, Loving What Is, Four Questions That Can Change Your Life, with husband Stephen Mitchell. And with author Michael Katt, she wrote, I Need Your Love, Is That True? How to Stop Seeking Love, Approval, and Appreciation and Start Finding Them Instead. In these books, on her website, and in workshops across the United States and around the world, she reaches those who are suffering emotionally by offering them a program she calls The Work. The Work is done through a series of four simple questions that, when applied to a specific problem, invites people to meet their thoughts with understanding, see what's troubling them in a new light, and act from love. Byron Katie believes that suffering isn't caused by what happens to us, but by our thoughts about what happens to us. She says we are either attached to our stressful thoughts, or we can question them by doing the work. Byron Katie is not a therapist, counselor, or a religious leader. However, social workers, nurses, and marriage counselors who attend her workshops can receive continuing education credit. Her method is far-reaching. A group of inmates at San Quentin Prison do the work regularly. People enthusiastic about sharing the work have created inquiry circles around the world to do the work together around commonly held beliefs. Her ideas are spreading through the sale of video and audio tapes that have been translated into more than a dozen languages. Byron Katie is our guest, and you'll have a chance to talk to her by calling 333-9455 or toll 3-800-222-9455. Again, those numbers, 333-9455. Or toll 3-800-222-9455. And Byron Katie's website, thework.com, includes the four questions that comprise the work, an explanation of how to do the work, downloadable worksheets for the work, a list of upcoming events, and a community section to connect like-minded people in the same geographic region. Again, if you'd like to talk to Byron Katie, the number is 333-9455 or toll free 800-222-9455. And now, by telephone from California, I'd like to welcome Byron Katie to the Afternoon Magazine. Hello.
Hi, Kimberly.
Many people simply call you Katie. Would it be all right if I did the same?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Well, before we talk about the work as a method for happiness and action through love instead of anger or fear, tell us the story. How did you arrive at the work?
Well, you know, my life, I was so very, very depressed for more than a decade, and I didn't see a way out. I was very suicidal. My self-esteem was so low that I was actually sleeping on the floor. And one morning, actually, a bug crawled over my foot, a cockroach, and I opened my eyes, you know, just I was just shot out of that sleep. And in place of all that darkness was an experience that I can't describe, but I can tell listeners what I came out with. In that moment, I realized that when I believed my thoughts, I suffered. But when I questioned my thoughts, I didn't suffer. And I've come to see that this is true for every human being. I didn't realize it immediately on the floor. What I realized was that my thoughts were not true. And it absolutely blew my mind. And so I began to give people a way to question their minds, and I still do that today.
So what kind of thoughts had you been holding in your mind that caused such a depression for 10 years?
Well, you know, people don't appreciate me. People don't really care. My children don't listen to me. my husband doesn't appreciate me. I'm too fat. I'm hopeless. I'm stupid. You know, these universal thoughts that run through all of us. And in that moment on the floor, I noticed that it's like my body was breathing, but I wasn't doing it. I just noticed that this breath was a gift. And then I noticed that my thoughts were the same, that I wasn't doing them, that they just, the thoughts are like raindrops, you know, they just, thoughts happen, breath happens. And some of these thoughts that happen are very, they bring a lot of frustration and sadness into our lives and anger. And I've come to see that after questioning my stressful thoughts, but that I'm left with only the thoughts that are truer to my nature, like, how can I help? What can I do in this moment right now to serve life? Mm-hmm. And there are no stressful thoughts to stop me. And so I invite people, Kimberly, to question the stressful thoughts, because it's only the stressful thoughts we're believing that keep us from having everything in our life that we deserve. And we deserve everything that's wonderful, but because we believe our stressful thoughts, our fearful thoughts, it's as though we're stopped in our tracks and very frustrated as we live out of this fear that believing our thoughts create.
So tell us exactly what is the work, this method that you came up with to question thoughts, stressful thoughts?
Well, it's four questions and what I call a turnaround. So let's say you take a stressful thought that you're believing, like he doesn't care, she doesn't appreciate me, etc. And I invite everyone to find one now that seems to run their life. And we put that thought, a concept, a stressful concept, up against these four questions and turn it around. So the first question simply is it true? This thought I'm believing, is it true? The second question is, can I absolutely know that it's true? This thought that I'm believing and experiencing, can I absolutely know that it's true? And so often our thoughts about other people and, you know, can we know their hearts and their minds? It's enough to know our own. The third question, how do I react when I think that thought? How do I react when I believe that concept? And through this question, we begin to see how we actually live our lives out of that belief. And we come to see clearly how we limit our lives because we believe it. And it's not right or wrong. This is this questioning that everyone can do for themselves wakes us up to a whole other life. It sounds too simple and it's rather miraculous. You know, we've heard it's the truth that sets us free. Well, it really is true. The fourth question, who would I be without that thought? Who would I be living my life if I didn't believe that? And all four of these questions are meditation. You ask them and you wait. You simply, you become still and wait for the answer that may just shock you, just absolutely shock you. I am shocked to believe, to come to understand that I believed thoughts that absolutely weren't true. And like a child, when I questioned them, I woke me up to what was true and a whole other life. So then I invite people to turn the thought around. For example, he doesn't appreciate me. If I were dealing with that thought, turned around, he does appreciate me. And then to become very still and look at the ways, if any, where I can find situations where he does appreciate me. And maybe it's my children that I'm looking at, or a partner, a business partner. Maybe I'm in the hospital and it's the doctor or the nurse. You know, what? Because these thoughts, you know, we attach them to every situation as long as we believe them. So another, and I invite people to find, you know, one or two or three ways that, despite spell, that wake us up from the spell that says that they don't appreciate us. And at least we find a balance in it. Often we can see, well, there's an area where he doesn't appreciate me, and then there are areas when he does. But we've been, when the mind believes he doesn't appreciate me, then it's as though it encompasses the whole relationship, because the mind looks at the whole that way. Mm-hmm. And then I've come to see that the mind has a job to do, and that is to give us all the pictures and theories and concept to prove that that first thought is right. In other words, he doesn't appreciate me. Then my mind begins its journey, giving me all the pictures that prove to me that he doesn't appreciate me. You know, there's the term tunnel vision comes to mind. And people talk about intention and having kind intentions and intentions to live out of that are kind. But these others run in us. They run in us to the point where they're running our lives. Mm-hmm. You know, what is my true intention, the mind's true intention? To prove that he doesn't care about me. And I don't like that that's my intention. But I've noticed that I have to live out of that intention until I question it. Mm-hmm.
I want to.
It's we have no idea what is running our lives until we begin to write our stressful thoughts down and question them.
Yeah, I want to encourage those listeners who are online. They can go to thework.com and under the resources part of your website, they can download these workshops and do this work. You write in the book "Loving What Is" that quote: "The fear of not being fearful is one of the biggest stumbling blocks for people beginning inquiry. They believe that without stress, without anger, they wouldn't act. They would just sit around with drool running down their chins. Whoever left the impression that peace isn't active has never known peace the way I know it. I'm entirely motivated without anger," unquote. Tell us more about that.
Well, you know, we really believe that you know, like, let's say I want to lose weight. I believe I'm too fat. And then I break my diet. Well, then my mind says, what's the matter with you? You fail at everything. You promised yourself you would not break the diet. You're never going to learn. Feel those thoughts. It's as though we have this club and we're beating ourselves up with it. And many of us, it's the only way we've known. And we believe that through those thoughts, that violence, that internal violence is going to put us back into our diets, and if we're violent enough, it's going to keep us on the diet. So what I have come to see is that love is the power, that peace is underrated, and that peace is the way, love is the way, because it's intelligent. Fear and stress and these unkind thoughts we have about life and ourselves, they have been our motivators for forever. And so I really love introducing another way, just to trust that peace is the way. Because until we do, it's as though we want war to end in the world, but we're believing personally that it works for us. Like, what's the matter with me? I broke my diet. I'm never going to learn. You're fat. You're this. You're that. And that internal violence, you know, it's actually used as a motivator. And any mind, anyone that believes this, is a very confused mind. Because, you know, how do we react when we believe those thoughts? Mm-hmm. We also, it spills over to our families and to people in our workplaces. And the effect is depression and self-hatred and low self-esteem.
I want to invite listeners who may have some stressful thoughts right now to give a call at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455 and speak with Byron Katie, our guest. And while you go ahead and do that, I want to say that the work that you're talking about is about writing down your stressful thoughts about someone you haven't totally forgiven. What I find very interesting, Katie, about the work is that people use it in different ways. The work can be done on a spouse, partner, child, parent, lover, friend, boss, coworker, and corporations, governments, organizations, and commonly recognized tragedies. So how is it that the work can be applied in these different ways?
because we're dealing with our thoughts. So our stressful thoughts about anyone or anything, if they bring on stress, you know, we can put them up to these four questions and turn around and find our way clear through them and see what reality is. You know, stress is nothing more than the difference between perception and reality. It's that simple.
We have a caller on line four from Eureka. Go ahead, caller.
Good afternoon. An interesting program. When you were thought, when you brought up the idea of beating up on yourself and negative thoughts, my mind went to Aaron T. Beck, who is, I believe, one of the founders of the movement Cognitive Psychology, and some of his followers, I believe, were David Burns and Elbert T. Ellis is another one. And a lot of times they talk about talking back to your thoughts. And I believe Beck has 12 cognitive distortions and Burns has 10. I found it careful. I found it useful, and I'm wondering, and I'll take the answer off the air, if you've ever read Beck or Burns, because I think they offer some very useful antidotes to one's, I guess, thinking, and I guess the whole idea that one's thoughts, and automatic thoughts especially, are not reality, and that one can maybe get a bit clearer perception of reality, along with maybe help from therapy and other friends by using exercises which are designed to, writing them down and talking back to them. I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you.
Excellent, excellent. And what I've come to see is, as long as I believe these thoughts, I don't have a choice. My life has to be lived out of them. So we can work with these thoughts and bring a little light into it. And yet, as long as I believe them, my life is going to it's going to be limited in some way.
You know, I was just thinking of a recent example, those miners that died in that mine accident. I remember reading about them and then they thought they were alive and then they had died. And after reading that they had died, I remember thinking about what their deaths must have been like, how they must have suffered. And of course, I felt sad. And then the next day, I read in the paper that some of the miners had written notes to their loved ones to say they weren't suffering. They were going to go to sleep, and they had the forethought to know what their loved ones might be thinking, that they might suffer, and they wrote these notes to say we're not.
Isn't that, you know, the difference between our perception of what they were experiencing and reality? And who was suffering while they were suffering? It was us, those of us who were believing our thoughts about them. And so, you know, their suffering, is it true? Can I absolutely know that it's true? Well, you know, turned around, I'm the one suffering over them suffering. And I don't know whether they're suffering or not. What I know is there's one human being that I can help through that suffering, and that human being would be me. Because when I'm suffering, I'm not as helpful and clear about my life as I am when I am clear and not suffering. Suffering is simply believing our stressful thoughts.
I have this worksheet in front of you that you ask people who want to do the work to do. I got it from your website, thework.com. And you call the worksheet the Judge Your Neighbor Worksheet. Well, no, that doesn't sound very loving. Now, what happened to the Love Thy Neighbor as Thyself?
Well, you know, what happened to Love Thy Neighbor as Thyself is that we don't. Mm. We don't. We want to. You know, we don't until we do. So I invite people to take that part of their mind that is stressful and to write it, to put it on paper, you know, thoughts onto this Judge Your Neighbor worksheet, and then put those stressful thoughts up against these four questions and turn around. But I invite people to allow the mind to live, to take it out of its straitjacket and let it express itself on paper, because we have been taught for years not to judge, that it's bad, that it's wrong. And so when the mind judges, we feel maybe a little guilty, like we're bad people, and guilt is nothing more also than believing our stressful thoughts. And guilt, you know, we actually believe, that, again, that that's the motivator that would show us a better life. and my experience, and I had 43 years of living, excuse me, of living guilt, and it didn't show me anything but more guilt and stress. Mm. And so as I questioned my mind, I haven't experienced guilt in years, and it leaves me as a student in my own life to watch what works and doesn't work about my life. But guilt, you know, that takes a lot of energy. And I prefer using that energy for more worthwhile projects.
So when you talk about not having guilt, that's different from not taking responsibility if you act in a harsh way or an angry way toward yourself or others.
Very different. Very, very different.
So we're not talking about that everyone's A-OK and they can do whatever they want if they just question their thoughts and, you know, trick themselves or something like that. It's really not about that at all.
Oh, boy, is it not about that. It's about the real thing, the real deal. You know, this guilt is, it holds us back. And it's not right or wrong. It's just that it takes a lot of energy and it keeps us in a depressed little box.
When the person's doing the work, it's important to write out their thoughts on paper, not just answer the questions that are on the worksheet. And I'll get to those in a minute. In the person's mind, how come? Why do you ask people to write it versus just in their mind answer the question?
Because when we put them up against these four questions and turn around, if we don't write them down, then the mind can shift and say, oh, I didn't really mean that. No, it's not really true. And you don't walk it. You don't continue to walk it through this amazing wake-me-up process. And the mind's very, very tricky. Like, if I had the thought, he doesn't appreciate me, and I said, is it true? And then I said, oh, no, no, no. Well, I've stopped the process.
Hmm.
And if I continue to walk it through, if it's in writing, and I walk it through, the thought, you know, I didn't really mean he doesn't appreciate me, you know, but you can see how the mind shifts.
Mm-hmm.
So when it's written down, there it is. It's stable. It's in writing. And you know it came from you. And you just walk it through the whole process, which is a very short, simple one. And then also when we get to a turnaround, he doesn't appreciate me. Another turnaround is, I don't appreciate him. And then I sit in that and see the things that he has done for me and where I have not appreciated it. And it gives me an opportunity in this discovery, these amazing discoveries, these simple discoveries that I make. The next time I talk with him, not only am I awake to them, but I can thank him.
Mm.
And this brings people together just miraculously, and it all begins with you, you know, with me. And another turnaround, he doesn't appreciate me. Another turnaround is, I don't appreciate me. And to look at all the wonderful things that we actually do in our lives for ourselves and others, and how we discount those, we come to see that we're pretty wonderful people. I've come to see, you know, we were talking about this guilt, but I've come to see that no human being would ever harm another human being if they were not confused.
Mm-hmm.
So as we wake up to our own confusion, we come to see that it really is true, that if I say, do something that I believe is harmful for you or to you, it is me I hurt. Yes, it hurts you. But that hurts me. So as we become saner in this process of questioning what we believe, we become very aware that it's only me I hurt.
Mm.
And so the process becomes one of self-love, of one of caring. And the more we care about ourselves, the kinder we are to other people. You know, the world is a mirror of our thinking. So, you know, love thy neighbor as thyself, as you mentioned. You know, I always have. I hated me. I hated you.
Yeah.
And then as I continued to question my mind, I came to love me. And so I love you automatically. I care about you automatically because my mind is not projecting itself onto you in a dishonest way. dishonest to me, the way I would see it, as someone who has questioned their mind.
We do have a caller from Urbana in just a second. I want to remind others of the phone number to call in and talk with our guest, Byron Katie. The numbers are 333-9455 or 1-800-222-WILL. Go ahead, caller from Urbana on line two.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Katie, I have a question for you regarding just if you're thinking about, like, not feeling guilt or not feeling, remorse for your actions is kind of what you were talking about with the guilt. I just have a question about how then, what like the good place that guilt actually can play in making you change your behavior. I mean, some of my behavior in the past has been negative behavior. You know, I've drank too much, or I was a smoker, you know, I overate. And if I didn't have guilt and shame and remorse and all of those negative feelings, I don't think I would have changed.
Well, wasn't the smoking and the drinking the teacher? Is it true it was actually guilt? When the mind looks back on what we did when we were drinking and smoking and doing those things, is it guilt that is serving us? Or looking back at it and seeing, you know, what works and what doesn't work?
I don't know. I don't know how to differentiate that. I mean, I just really try to, I've thought about it a lot. It's just like, well, I really couldn't love myself into not drinking.
No.
I really did have to shame myself into not drinking.
Well,
I had to feel a lot of shame over my behavior.
Yeah.
And I really couldn't distinguish what was true and what wasn't true until I had a little distance from it and had other people help me. I couldn't decide on my own what was true and what wasn't, because it was distorted by my desire or, you know, addiction for the desire to keep drinking, I guess.
Yes, and I'm not against guilt, because like you, I see its amazing power, and I have come to see that there's something more powerful, and that is the truth. And so I'm very open to guilt and shame. It's all, and all the thoughts that go with that. So I've put them on paper and questioned them, and all that energy that it took, you know, leave me more alert and awake and energized to look at my past, at my life, and have the energy to change it that was never there before when guilt was such a teacher for me. But, you know, guilt, I cannot tell you how I'm following you. It was the best I had going for me. And yes, a great teacher. There's a lot of pain that comes through guilt.
What about the difference between, and you know, today I feel like I can trust my intuition. I can ask myself a question and wait for the right answer.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that does come with having been in therapy for a lot of years, with having, you know, worked through lots of self-help books, as a matter of fact, becoming sort of a self-help junkie for a while, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when do you recommend people don't just work on their own too? Don't you think that there's a time and a place for trusting your own assessment of things, but a time and place for also getting outside assistance?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, the work, this questioning what we believe, it's like a jet plane. And I can't tell you how often I send people to 12-step programs. You know, it works hand in hand. The work is nothing more than questions, and these questions don't even say, answer me. You know, they're just questions, and it's kind of an offering. When I discovered, for myself and began to present this, these four questions and turn around, it was just so quick and simple and profound. And I suggest that people do everything that you've named, and these questions can really collapse our time in pain. And I hear that so consistently. From people all over the world. But I don't ever say people should answer these questions. You know, I just put them out there and offer them. And I don't have anything that is not free on my website. it's just four questions and a turnaround,
and they can be
pretty scary to answer.
Yeah, I think the questions sound like great tools, and just I'm just saying like too that there's many tools, and they do sound like good ones. Like just especially the do I absolutely know it's true, because there's very little that you absolutely do know.
Yeah, and to sit in that, you know, these I know minds, we think we know something, and when we question it, you know, our whole identity falls away, and it leaves always a kinder identity. And that's what I find so miraculous about the truth, is as we're questioning what we believe, it blows our mind. You know, I say it's like I'm walking through the desert, and I see, it's a beautiful day, and I see a rattlesnake in front of me. I almost step on it, and I'm terrified of snakes, and I jump back, and I'm paralyzed with fear, and my head is sweating, and I'm shaking. And then I look down again. The cloud is kind of shifted, and the sun changes, and I look down again, and actually I come to see it was not a snake. It was simply a rope. I was confused. And then I invite people to stand over that rope for 1,000 years and try to make themselves afraid of it again. Well, it's not possible. They can't, because the truth has set them free. They have realized for themselves the difference between what they were believing and reality. So this once we really get what's true and what's not, we're free. But then you can watch other people that come upon that rope, and they yell, and they run, and they skin their knee as they're running, trying to get away from it. But you know, there's nothing you can do to convince them that the rope is not a snake. There's nothing. We cannot change another person's mind. You know, we can tell them our truth, and then their mind changes. But, you know, I've come to see, and this is a very, strange statement to people, but I've come to see that every problem in my life is a rope. That every problem looks like a snake, and it is a rope, and that is quite a statement. And for me, that's what I've come to see after years of simply questioning my mind, and really encouraging people to do their programs and find help and find support groups, and just to hang on and that there is a way out of confusion.
Thank you for your time.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
We have another caller, line four from Bourbonas. Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, please. Ask your question.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't hear you over the phone.
Okay, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Okay, yeah.
Great.
I have two questions, I think. The first is that Katie is saying that we buy into these thoughts, and that's how it all starts. My experience is more that the prime generator is emotions. And it seems to be true either way, that emotions generate thoughts or thoughts generate emotions.
Yes.
But it seems, with me at least, to start with feeling bad.
Yes. I call these feelings where we feel bad, like fear, frustration, sadness, I see them as the alarm clock that is a gift. It says it wakes me up to I need to look at what my thoughts are right now. Like if I'm experiencing fear, then I look to my thoughts and I see what I'm believing, because I've come to see that mind is cause and then feelings are an effect. Fact of mind, and it takes a very still introspection to find the stories we're in when we're experiencing these feelings. But I've come to see that I do feelings to me when I believe my thoughts, and it's not a bad thing when I'm awake to my thoughts through feelings, it shows me what I haven't questioned yet. So it's really a fast track home, and feelings turn out to be friends, not enemies.
Okay. I'll have to live with that.
Well, you know, not necessarily, because my truth may not be your truth.
Well, that's one thing I'm thinking, too, is that, you know, we may just be two different types, and we're still trying to get to the same place.
Boy, you know, I really know feelings of anguish and fear and sadness and hopelessness and just welcome to the work.
Well, thank you. Do you have time for a second question from me? Or?
I do, absolutely.
Okay, go ahead, caller.
It's kind of along the lines of the previous caller. And Kim, I think you said something about this, too. What I find is that sometimes the things I'm feeling guilty about are true. You know, to use the previous caller's example, if I drink too much, that's true. I do drink too much.
Yeah.
And, it's hard.
Well, some things are just true.
Yeah.
Some things are just true. And these questions don't have the motive of answering them yes or no. These questions take you into your own experience. They're personal, you know. It's no longer about how the world thinks and what the world believes. I finally had to take responsibility to see what do I think, what do I believe. This is my life.
Well, yes. My point is that there is such a thing as genuine guilt. If you genuinely violate your precepts or your parameters, your standards, then you're guilty.
Well, in my life, I just notice that I've done that, and I see immediately what to change, and then I notice that I change it or I don't, and each time I become more acutely aware of how I am hurting me, and because I'm no longer masochistic, I'm just so alert to you know, if I hurt you, I hurt me. And so I don't have it's as though guilt no longer has a place in me because I have found another way. And again, I'm totally for guilt. I'm up for it. It's just that I found a fast track that bypasses it. And who knows? I may experience guilt sometime today, but it's not a bad thing. It's always, everything's a teacher.
Yeah, you said you found another way, and I know this program is about that other way. But could you summarize that?
An example of something you feel guilty over?
Being unpunctual.
Okay, so you should be on time. Is that true?
Yeah.
You know, and the whole world would back you on that. And now we're looking at you. So you should be on time. Can you absolutely know that that's true, that you should be on time?
Well, there's, yeah.
Yeah, the whole world says we should. And we commit to it. And sometimes we're late. That's reality. We don't want to be. We don't like to be. But I should be on time. You should be on time. Can you absolutely know that that's true? You know, that's the part, you know, where it tickles me when I'm questioning my own mind. I'm thinking, who needs God when I have my opinion? I should be on time. What do I know? How do you react when you think the thought, you should be on time, and you're late? How does it feel? You know, those feelings you were talking about. How does it feel when you think the thought, I should be on time, and you're late?
That feels defeated.
Yes, and how do you encounter other people when you feel defeated and you're believing the thought, I should be on time?
Well, I'm less optimistic, but I'm still cheerful enough.
and let's look at the stressful effects.
Yeah.
You know, if I believe I should be on time and I'm late, you know, I feel guilt for one thing. I'm guilty.
Yeah, and that's then, what I'm saying.
Yeah. So who would you be when you're late? Who would you be without the thought I should be on time? Who would you be doing your job, encountering your or, you know, whatever it is that you're doing, encountering life without the thought, you know, life in that situation, living that out without the thought I should be on time?
Probably more efficient.
Yes. Less guilt. Being efficient. Awake. So you should be on time. What's an opposite?
Doesn't matter.
No, the opposite, using the same words. It's like I should be on time, turned around, I should not be on time.
Yeah.
Now, that's not forever and every situation, just the one that, that you're experiencing. So in that, turned around, I should not be on time. My mind opens to, since I'm late anyway, I may as well open my mind to see what good comes from this situation. Why is it better that I was not on time, since that's the reality of it? I may as well see the good in it, the reality in it. So I start to look at what I did accomplish while I was being late, or what I saw, or what I experienced. And I can even look around. Because I was late, someone else maybe had the opportunity to do the job I was to do, that it got taken care of. And maybe I come to see that I am just, you know, that other people are at least as good at doing things as I am. You know, so many things open. You know, I've come to see that you know, people talk about their hearts are closed down, and I've come to see that an open heart is not possible to a closed mind. So open heart is an open mind. So when I am believing that I should be on time, and the reality is I was late, then my mind is doing the war with reality. The truth is, you know, how do I know I should not have been on time? I wasn't. I'm not. Now, what can I do from here to make that right? And it's a marvelous world. You know, I can make amends. I can see how people are affected because I was late. I can see why it was better, and I can also see why to be on time and maybe get up earlier in the morning than is my usual, if it is a pattern of some kind. But, you know, how do I know I should not be on time? In this instance, I wasn't. Now, what good has come out of that? I've come to see that the nature of everything is goodness. And, you know, if I'm running late and the light turns red, you know, how do I know I'm to be late? The light turned red. And then I can get very still. I should be on time. I should not be on time. And see, what can I see as I'm sitting in this traffic light, stopped, you know? And then just breathe and notice maybe a beautiful day. And maybe it's the first time in the whole day that I've been still enough to notice. But there's an amazing stillness that comes out of the truth. It really is the truth that sets us free. But, you know, this war with reality, I say, you know, that even sadness is a tantrum, even though a minor tantrum. It's the war with reality, and I lose 100% of the time when I am doing war with reality. The place I have the power to change the world is right here, right now. And if I am full of stress and guilt and shame, I don't have the power to be that effect that I deserve to be and that the world deserves me to be.
Okay, I'm going to have to say we only have a few minutes left, so I'm sorry, callers, that we had one from Urbana and Aurora, and I really apologize. I wish we could go longer, but we're not able to. I want to end with just on your website, Katie, you always have a message for the day, and I'm just going to read it. And it says, until you look forward to criticism, your work is not done.
Yes. Criticism is, you know, I call it, you know, like the fast track to what is true. If someone says, Katie, you're unkind, I have come to see that defense is the first act of war. All they've said is, I am unkind. Now, I can look to myself and see where it's true, or I cannot look and just attack immediately. Like, how dare you say I'm unkind? You don't know me. How can you say such a thing? Now, who started the war? I did. I just did. And if someone says, Katie, you're unkind, that criticism, it is my opportunity to see what is it about me that I have the possibility of changing. Are they right? So it doesn't matter what criticism comes at me. I'm always in the position of, could they be right? Is there something that I have overlooked? And then that person, I can say, you know, tell me more. Where is it that you see that I'm unkind? I don't want to be unkind. Maybe between the two of us, we can straighten me out. But that's an open mind and an open heart. Mm.
Thank you so much, Katie, for joining us today on the Afternoon Magazine.
You are so welcome. It's so my privilege.
That was Byron Katie, businesswoman, author, self-help facilitator. She's the mastermind behind The Work, a series of four simple questions that, when applied to a specific problem, can help people see what's troubling them in a new light and act from love instead of anger and fear. Byron Katie's written two books, Loving What Is, Four Questions That Can Change Your Life, and I Need Your Love, Is That True? How to Stop Seeking Love, Approval, and Appreciation, and Start Finding Them Instead. You may visit Byron Katie on the web at www.thework.com. That's www.thework.com. I'm guest host Kimberly Cronick. Thanks for joining us in this hour of the Afternoon Magazine. The time is now 1:53. The settlement should be in from the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange. With those numbers, here's Todd Gleason.
Thank you very much, Kimberly. From the Chicago Board of Trade, an interesting day at the board today as futures rallied in the corn pit and the bean pit. Corns didn't manage to hang on to that rally. They were trying to run up through 221 in the nearby March contract. Managed a high price today of 222, but if you read the numbers from DTN and a couple of other places, they say 221 was the magical place, and they really needed to close above that to continue a trend higher. We'll see what happens tomorrow. They didn't do that today. They were down a penny in that nearby March contract, finished at 217.75, well off the trading high that the most had hoped that they would break through today. In the bean pit, the hope was that they would rally and stay above $6, 601, in fact, in the nearby March contract. They pushed to 603.5, managed a 9.5 cent gain today, which sounds good all in itself, but they didn't close above 6 even. They finished at 598.75 in the March contract in the bean pit. We'll talk a little bit later today. During the closing, Mark report comes up at 6 after the hour, 2 o'clock Central Time, what, about 10, 12 minutes away, when we'll take up this subject with Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois, as we do each and every Monday. Now, here are the numbers from the Board of Trade and the Kansas City Board of Trade. As they finished for the day, the March wheat, hard red winter wheat contract, 4.5 cents higher in Kansas City. They had a high of $4.5, a low at 394.5. Their settlement at 398.25. They were up 4.5 for the day. July futures there up a penny and 3/4. 403 the high, the low at 97.5. A settlement price at 399.75. March wheat from the Chicago Board of Trade, 349 the high. Low at 343.5, the soft red winter wheat settled the nearby contract at 345.25. They were up a penny and 3/4. May futures, 359.5 on the high, the low at 54.5. A settlement price at $3.56, up 1.25. In July wheat, 369 the high, the low at 363.5. Settlement price there at 365.5. They finished a penny and a half higher. September futures, 377.5 the high, the low at 373, settled at $3.75.5, up 1.5 in December futures at 390.75, high and low at 386.5. December wheat settled at $3.88, they were up a penny and 3/4 for the day. March corn now $2.22 the high, low at 216.75, settlement price at 217.75, down 1. May 231.5, the high, the low at 226.5. Settlement price at $2.27.75, down 3/4. July futures in the corn pit, $2.40 a bushel. The high, the low at 235.5, settled there at 236.5. They were off one for the day. And the September futures, 247, the high, the low at 43. Settlement price at $2.43.75. They were down 3/4. December contract, the harvest month, 256, the high, low at 252.25. In the settlement price at $2.53.75 for the new crop December corn, down 0.5 cent. March futures, 261, the high, the low at 57.5. Settlement price at 259.5. They were off 0.25 for the day. March oats, 196.75, the high, the low at 192. Settlement price at 193. They were up 2.25 today. And the May oats at 188 on the high, the low at 184.5. Settled at 185. They were a penny higher. March soybeans, 603.5, the high, the low at 593.5. A settlement price at 598.75. And they made a move 9.5 cents higher today, but not strong enough for many on the technical side. Once again, we'll take that up with Kurt Kimmel this afternoon during the closing market report. May futures, 614, the high, low at 605. Settlement price at 609.5. They were up 9.75. July continuing their rally from Friday, 625, the high, the low at 615. Settlement price at 620.25, up 10.75. August soybeans, 625, the high, low at 619. Settlement price at 624, up 11.5 cents. And the Septembers were up 9 today, 625, the high, the low at 621. Settlement price at 623, up 9 cents. November beans, 635, the high, the low at 625. New crops settled 9.75 higher at 630.75. In the January futures, 638, the high, the low there at 630, and a settlement price at 633.5. They were 9 cents higher for the day. March bean meal up $1.80, 190.50, the high, the low at 186.80. Settlement price at 188.20 for the day. May futures 270 higher, 192.10, the high, the low at 188.60. Settlement price at 190.10. March bean oil, 22.45, the high, the low at 22.15. They settled at 22.20. They were up 15 for the day. And the May bean oil up 15 as well, 22.78 on the high, the low at 22.52, and a settlement price there at 22.54. Once again, that May bean oil contract up 15 for the day. From the Mercantile Exchange, feeder cattle finished like this, 109.75. They finished down 87.5 cents, and the high price at 110.70, the low at 109.65. April live cattle, 111.40, the high, the low at 110.37.5, and a settlement price at 110.50, 100 weight. They were down 97.5 cents, and the May futures 111.90, the high, the low at 110.80. A settlement price 100 weight, 111.15. They were down 82.5 cents. Live cattle February contract now, 93.95, the high, the low at 93.02.5. Settlement price at 93.25. They were down 65 for the day. And the April futures, 92 the high, the low at 91.02.5. Settlement price at 91.15, off 62.5 cents. And the February lean hogs from the Mercantile Exchange, 56.35, the high, the low at 55.90. Settlement price at 56.07.5, down 17.5 cents. The Aprils were off, or rather up.